previously on Worlds Away.
This blackmailer, I can't imagine they'd just let this go after you've already shown a willingness to do what they ask.
I haven't heard a word. You should know I've read in the rest of the team, Director Green and Mateo, on this.
You're putting a lot of trust in somebody who plays for the other side.
He put his life on the line and defied Aiden Kyros. We would already be at war if it weren't for him.
Mia, why is it that every time I see you, you're alone in a heavy populated transit area?
She's a numbtot.
I needed a place to play, and the more people around, the more there is to do, usually.
So, what's your mother's role here?
I think the same as everyone else, representing our planet here.
Delegate from Feronia.
Can I add one small detail to that? Which is that on each person's like headshot or whatever it might be in the detail section over here, there's an assigned member of the Minerva Project who's like the primary point of contact if that exists. And the only one that has Arno's name on it is Katia LeClaire.
Okay.
Oh my god.
Oh no. I think you also get Mendoza if she shows.
The only one that has Arno's name on it is Katia LeClaire.
When you went to the park, Arno, did anyone see you there?
I don't think I was followed.
You don't think? And then I think he lunges toward you, Arno.
Lillian Gale was Scion. And I exhale.
What did you come here for?
If we were on the brink of war before, I'm worried that there might already be nothing stopping us. And I'm worried that the Minerva Project is going to be the one that sparks the flames of war this time. We received that intel from Scion and plan to neutralize the devices that currently exist and the facility that produces them. And we plan to do it during this summit.
Our consul is dead. At this point, we know that this was not an accident. We will identify the cowards who are responsible for this crime, and we will bring them to justice. Now that said, our galaxy has seen too much mistrust, and I would like to prove that Aventine, along with all of the independent people of the Verge, is dedicated to a path of peace and of tolerance. In that spirit, I would like to introduce the person who will be helping me lead our negotiations here, someone proven to value peace, and now our acting consul to ascension. And from the side of the crowd, wearing his Aventine uniform, you see Ramon Herrera, now Aventine's acting consul, walk forward with a serious look as he goes to shake Aiden Kyros' hand. I'm just going to pause for a second here and just be like, are we all recording, y'all?
I'm checking. I'm going to check forever. I'm so scared. Yes, I'm recording.
I see squiggles. I'm not even going to play a prank that's like, oh, me.
I do see squiggles. I see squiggles. Check 1, 2, squiggle.
All right. I'm going to deem us good, but
that was
close. Are we ready to begin?
Yeah, let's fucking go.
All right. Welcome to World's Way, an actual play storytelling podcast. I am your game master, John Ossip, and here we've got Haley Daria.
Hello, hello.
Lauren Wilbanks.
Negative 69.
Nice. Michael Morales. And Moshe.
Happy World Day for Cultural Diversity for Dialogue and Development, parentheses, international.
Close you parentheses. Heard him, boys. Get him.
Yeah, that sounded a little bit like DEI.
Who knows? Who knows?
Is that today the day we're recording, or is that the day that you think this will be posted?
You have no idea.
It's today the day we're recording.
Okay. I'm gonna learn I'm gonna have to learn how to bleep, aren't I?
That whole thing? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Happy. Yeah. Yeah.
Eventually it's gonna be the whole podcast, if we're being honest. Yeah.
It's going to be like the whatever JFK files we're going to get.
Yeah.
On the crassy note, redacted with redacted, and then he redacted.
Don't get me started on this again. I already did this once today.
Yeah, we got a two-parter text-a-thon from Mike.
About the grassy knoll?
Yeah.
No, about like
Mike,
the...
Mike, do you believe there was a conspiracy? Yes or no? That's all I need to know.
That's not what this was. No, okay. Hold on.
Sounds
bear
like
with
that's
me.
A yes. I heard yes.
I'm going to give it a qualified yes, but in that...
Okay, I'm on... No, you and I are on the same side. You don't need to qualify to me.
I do need to qualify. Because J. Edgar Hoover got to pick who was on the Warren Commission. What the fuck, man? Anyway.
Okay.
Unrelated.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
What was on the Nixon tapes?
That's a good question.
We heard those. He was racist a lot.
We didn't hear the missing minutes.
And crazy a lot.
I think we get the vibe.
Yeah.
So, where we last left off.
The greatest political minds of a generation.
No one's ever accused us of that.
I was talking about our characters.
That's true. So, where we last left off, the delegates were arriving in the park on Ascension Station, where they were gathering for the start of the peace summit. We saw several people who you knew sit down in their assigned seats here. But the last to arrive was someone who we just met, and that was Aventine's first minister, Aiden Kuros, who revealed that Ramon Herrera, secretly Nasir's husband, would be Aventine's delegate to the summit. But now I want to turn it over to the four of you, and what I want to know is, what does it look like as you kick off this conference? Now, I know that the four of you have discussed this a bit, sort of in between the session. But are you welcoming the delegates or doing something formal here? Or else, what are we seeing after everybody takes their seats?
We're going to give some opening remarks.
Yeah, I think we called the conference, so we're probably I'm probably like frantically messaging Arno, who isn't here.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And being like, Arno, what the fuck? Like, quickly, quickly.
How late does Arno show up?
So I think at the time that this is all starting, Arno is probably wrapping up the conversation with Shaw. I don't know. I think I have my tablet on Do Not Disturb until I leave the facility where he's being held. Yeah, so I'm not getting any of this.
Yeah. I mean, maybe like what we see is kind of away from, maybe you're all like sort of, you're tapping Mo and everyone's waiting. And maybe we see you, Arno, look down and you see all the messages. And that's what we see.
Yeah, I think you get like an oh shit expression, like and he just starts jogging over to the reception.
Yeah. Do we see you all start without him, or how long do you wait before you begin your speeches?
Do we get a thumbs up emoji from Arno?
I think he was so frazzled, like seeing all the messages come in, that he didn't even give you a thumbs up or anything. He just,
oh wow.
I'm just making a beeline.
Then I think if we send multiple messages and get no response, I will take the stage.
Okay.
Can I ask a question of the three of us who are here?
Go for it.
What are we wearing?
Good question. Well, we look hot, so we can build off of that.
That's been established. Yeah. Okay. Are we not in the Minerva Project jackets?
I don't think we are.
No, I don't think so.
Like, I like the idea of us representing our like previous lives, if that makes sense, like going back to who we were before.
Then I think I take the stage wearing a modern, by the standards of the Republic, like blue suit, which I think similar almost to the jacket, has like a diagonal line across the chest rather than like the sort of lapel opening that we're probably familiar with. And I think pinned above my heart is a pin with a symbol of the Republic and a bright yellow, almost glowing flower.
Yeah, I think I really imagine Mara showing up looking very polished. To help people of this time understand, I think she's wearing kind of like an Angela Merkel or a Seto Kaiba. But I think there's something about it that has like dimensionality to it. The collarbone area kind of sticks out and there's like almost angles to it in a very geometric kind of way. It's the future. So I think that's what Mara has on. And she has one of the Genesynth pins on.
Mm. I think Leela is back in more of her artist garb. So she's got maybe a linen type shirt button down, some flowy pants, and then kind of like a cardigan or kind of like a flowy duster over top. I think she's just radiating calm and competent.
So if I can describe kind of the crowd's reaction, if you're taking the stage, I think maybe there was kind of confusion about why things weren't starting yet after the last delegate arrived. And so I think maybe there's kind of looks of concern. And I think people started having kind of side conversations. And I think it takes a little bit as you get to the podium, Nasir, if you're the first to speak, for the sound to die down as people start to notice that you're trying to address the group.
Esteemed delegates of humanity, thank you for being here today as we face the great challenges of our time. There will never be an unbreakable peace. There will never be a war to end all wars. The great peace of our era did not come from certainty, but when desperate people with different ideas came together, and in the face of catastrophe and despair, they chose hope. When they dared to dream. We flung ourselves across the stars 100 years ago. With a great infinite void before us, we chose to reach out and grow despite the cold, dark emptiness. We found inhospitable planets with no food, and we chose to call them home regardless. Once again, we were led by those who dared to dream. The history of humanity is full of these moments of contradiction. Of moments of hope despite all odds. The task before us today is the same as it has always been. To dare to dream. To face the challenges we have chosen to take on in pursuit of the greatness of our species, and to conquer the challenges posed by humanity's oldest enemies. Distrust, isolation, and fear. Humanity's great leaders have always dared to dream. I see no reason we should stop dreaming now. And with that, allow me to welcome to the stage one of the great dreamers of our generation, Dr. Mara Belova. And I think there's thunderous applause. Because everybody likes Mara.
Mm. We'll see.
Roll for applause.
I rolled a 12.
So I think Mara walks onto the stage definitely a little uneasy. I don't think that she is frequently making large, grandiose speeches to groups of people. I think that's more of a Nolan thing. But nevertheless, she kind of takes out her talking points and begins. Our history has too many examples of the ancestors shirking the challenges of their time. We look to technology to advance our capabilities beyond the means of our enemies, once and for all, paradoxically leading to an endless arms race. I will assert that peace is not the absence of disagreement, of challenge, of discord. Peace is disagreement in the presence of hope. Viewed through the lens of history, solving the propagation problem seems like a foregone conclusion. But I must remind everyone of the true futility felt by society by my colleagues. My own personal despair during the endless hours and infinite failures. In the midst of all this, a small smoldering of hope persisted. I know everyone here understands disagreement, believes in the futility. All I request is that you also believe in hope. Thank you for your time. The Minerva Project's chief conciliator, Leila Malik, has a statement on the goals of the summit. And Mara walks off and kind of gestures towards Leila.
So at this point, just to check, is Arno here yet?
Can I just take a little liberty on this really quickly to answer your question?
No.
Okay. Never mind then.
No answer. Go for it.
So I think when you cut back to Arno leaving Shaw, he broke out at a brisk jog to get to where the summit's being held right now. And he's running and he looks like he's running straight ahead and has a purpose, but he's not really looking at anything. He's looking past everything in front of him. And I think his breathing starts getting heavier, like he's been running for a really long time. It's only been maybe the equivalent of a city block at this point. And he can't stop thinking about the hurt in Shaw's face when he learned that Sion was dead, that Sion was Leigh and Gale, that things are getting worse. And I think that Arno has to stop to breathe, and he puts his hand on a bench and thinks and looks up and thinks about those first shots of Shaw when he received the dossier from Mendoza, and thinks about everything that's been put into motion that got him here, about reporting Shaw, about how things are getting wildly out of control and we are acting like everything's fine, like we have a plan, and really we're flying by the seat of our pants and hoping that everyone comes together and can actually come out of this with anything resembling an armistice or peace, or just not escalating tensions, even though we're about to go on a big mission that could literally blow this all up. And he would have broken down right there and then, but he's fighting back tears and just keeps on going, because that's the only way forward is through. And he is just trying to will himself to this podium and not think about what happened the last time he got up on a stage in front of people, which was that he lost everything. He lost FSOC, and he doesn't want that to happen again. And that's the only thing keeping him going, is just holding it all together. So you see Arno run up to the side of the stage, slightly out of breath, perspiration everywhere, and he's just tidying himself up. He's wearing the Minerva Project jacket, like he would have a fleet uniform, and he's looking through his slate, probably trying to find his notes that he had prepared for his remarks.
Well, damn.
Fuck.
I think that, so this happens like as Mara finishes her speech, or like what, can you put this in time for us?
Yeah, I think Leila is probably getting up to the stage, and as she's walking to the podium, she can see me on the other side of the stage, like walking up. So I don't know where you are relative to her.
I'm going to say that I walked off opposite and actually walked off on the side that you're at. And I probably see you approach and look really frazzled. And I think I just walk over and I don't really say anything. I just see that you're trying to straighten out the uniform. And I kind of like brush your shoulders and straighten things up. And I pat you on the back and I say, it's not so bad up there. You probably won't get shot this time.
Last time I went up, I lost almost everything. Let's hope it doesn't go that poorly again.
I think she just looks at you and nods.
So I think Leila just sees that Arno has made it, and that kind of helps reassure her and also means that, you know, she'll be able to hand it off to Arno once she's done. So I think she approaches the podium and starts to speak. Unlike my colleagues, I did not join this project with any real knowledge of the Verge. No more so than the average citizen of Earth. My expertise lay, instead, in my training as a conciliator from the Sato Institute. Everything I practice is based on the foundation that there is always a way to find a compromise. When the armistice was first signed, it was a symbol of a cooperation. It showed that we could put our future first and find a way to coexist. We are here today, however, because the armistice was not perfect. Our new armistice will not be perfect either. I can't promise that anyone will walk away pleased, but I can say that each viewpoint will be heard and that the solutions we craft will be based on a foundation of respect. We come here with strongly held beliefs that are often at odds with each other. I won't downplay the chasms that separate us, but I also don't wish to underestimate the determination of the folks gathered here today. Humanity has sent some of its brightest thinkers to help shape our future. I'm ready to get started. And then I think she spreads her arms kind of towards the rest of the gathered delegates and says, "Are you?" And I'm hoping at that point that there is some applause in response from the crowd.
I think there's a pause, and then I think actually the first person to clap is Reeve Kasarek.
Yeah, that's our girl.
She's quickly followed by President Lee, and then several other people join in, including Aiden Kiros. I think you see kind of nod respectfully.
So I think Leela just, lets that happen for a second and says, "Well, to end our opening remarks here, I welcome." Sorry, let me pause. It's Lieutenant Arno Hines of Fleet Special Operations. What is the C for?
Shit. Command?
Is that how you...
You should just say Lieutenant Arno
Hines. It's the Fleet Special Operations Command, but I don't know if that's how you would introduce him. You know what I mean? Because that's kind of like, of this Navy SEAL killing badass machine. You know what I mean? It's kind of a weird introduction.
Okay, so Lieutenant Arno Hines.
We just get heavy guitar coming in.
Yeah, it's like, as we finish introducing this peace conference, we bring you the guy that shot Bin Laden.
Okay.
Can we talk about that guy?
That's why.
Peace through strength.
Did you guys see that guy before the election?
No, reclaiming my time.
Nevertheless, she persisted.
When you said nevertheless she, I was like, persistent. The next word is persistent.
Please proceed.
So I think after kind of letting that response flow for a second, Leela's going to then lead into Arno's remarks and say, "Thank you. And now let me introduce Lieutenant Arno Hines to complete our opening remarks." And then she'll step to the side.
I think Arno pauses for just a second and makes his way to the podium. And he takes a couple of deep breaths and a somber expression comes across his face. And he says, "Today's a day of ceremonies and speeches. But throughout the Verge on our home worlds, we've spent countless days honoring and mourning the dead of our wars. We recall their valor and their sacrifices." And Arno's hands begin to shake, and he looks down at his tablet. "We remember that they gave their lives so that others might live." And he puts his tablet down, face down, and says, "But how do we honor those who are still fighting? Since the inception of the Minerva Project, we have been shot at, targets of espionage, targets of deceit. We have been chased by unknown assailants from every end of the Verge. And we've questioned who our real friends and foes are. And all of this has been in a time of peace, supposed peace. The armistice is not working. We're still fighting, and we haven't talked about it. We need to talk about it. We need to stop it. Because the people on your worlds, our worlds, who are still dying and still fighting, they don't even know what it's for, and neither do we. There's no purpose, there's no direction, there's just violence. It's in the name of nothing. And if we really aspire to hope and dream as humanity, then it's time to say the quiet part out loud here at this conference, to make a peace that will last, to come together, and to mean it this time. Thank you. And I don't wait for an applause. I just walk off the stage.
And I'll just add, I don't think that there is applause. I think that as, if you walk off, everybody is just kind of left in a bit of a stunned silence.
If he walks off the stage, I'll retake it. Just to invite everyone.
Like, do the logistical, like, the yeah, next. Like,
once again, esteemed delegates of humanity, thank you all for coming. There will be a welcome reception held here in the Ascension Park. Business will commence bright and early tomorrow. So we look forward to hearing from each and every one of you about your contributions to the future of humanity. I think there's like a large buffet table on the side or like bars and stuff on the side immediately.
I think when you say that, maybe it's, you know how before when Leela spoke, there was kind of a pause and then Reef Kasarat clapped. I think we see that Evelyn Lee was almost like waiting for you to do that to break the silence and quickly claps. And then everybody kind of chimes in on that. And, you know, then we kind of, I think, cut away from that scene. And maybe we see the beginning of this welcome reception. How does the space kind of transform? You know, I think we had described there being a bunch of seats set out in front of the stage. But what does the park look like as the mood is kind of shifted into this more, I guess, informal setting? And Mo, you said there were kind of bars off to the side, I think. What does this look like in terms of setting the scene?
So I think pretty much immediately staff comes in and moves the chairs out of the way. So it opens up a wider area. I think as Mo said, there's kind of buffet tables with general hors d'oeuvres set out. And there's also places to get drinks and all that stuff. I think there's also, like, this is not a, you know, extravagant affair. We're trying to keep it business focused here. We have things to do. But I do think that there is some, like, I'm imagining some kind of lighting, like maybe some kind of twinkly lighting fixtures that get put up around. I guess let me pause and say, I assume that, I don't know if we've really talked about how lighting works on Ascension Station, but I would think that since it's an artificial environment, we would want to have some sort of imitation of day-night cycles.
The day-night cycle. Yeah, I think we've mentioned
our,
that before.
Our circadian rhythms. And so I imagine that kind of the, you know, pseudo-natural light in this area is dimming on its timer as it's getting closer to the evening. And so these light fixtures are kind of going up to light the area and kind of give it a different ambiance.
It's kind of like a night among the stars, but the stars are kind of 360 here.
I want to revisit something we suggested during the Eos Eclipse Festival, which is like the bioluminescent spray paint.
Oh, yeah.
Let us not forget.
Oh, I could not forget that. I think that there have been tasteful representations done of all of the Verge planets. Worlds and planets, starting out with Earth. What do we think Earth's symbol here is?
John, is there already a pre-ascribed symbol for the Republic?
I'm trying to remember. I don't think we've said anything on like.
So let me pause and say, one time I got Mo these stickers for his water bottle of different national parks. And it's just like these strips of like different landscapes. And Mo's holding up to the camera right now. So touching to see you still have those.
I've used three of them.
That's awesome. So I'm kind of imagining like maybe we have like a iconic landscape from vista. Each planet.
Yeah.
A vista, exactly. And that kind of is showcasing the variety of the different environments. You know, we've got like the blue of Feronia, and we've got the all the other ones.
Go ahead, Mo. Say it.
I'll go ahead. So it's like the forests of Consus, or the sort of like twisty, silvery pathways of Sadis. I think Eos is like it's an ocean, right?
Crystal ocean, yeah.
But it's got like a crystal glow to it. Next, we went to Lua. No, nothing from there. Fuck Lua.
Yeah.
It's just kind of blurry.
And then... And for Aventine, I think you see a vista of looking out from like a plateau into something that is like half bad land, half like burgeoning grasslands, a valley filled with flowers mid transformation. So a mix of glowing orangey yellows, mulberries and reds, and deep purples.
So basically our album art.
But the flowers are in transition. I have a question for us. Do we think we had these made, or do we think we commissioned each planet when they to do their own and they're showing off for each other?
Oh, I think they're showing off for each other.
Right? I think 100%. I also want a name for our special planet that we never visited. There's a bunch of vineyards for Lucina.
Okay, oh, yeah, lovely. Yeah. Lucina, honorable mention, and that we mentioned it a lot.
If we don't go to Lucina, we riot.
And none for Gretchen Wieners.
When's our beach episode happening?
That's Lucina.
Whenever John lets us go to Lucina.
Yeah, sorry. You have to earn your beach episode.
No. Hey, player agency, we're in control. We're going to Lucina, baby.
Oh. Fuck this piece.
Everyone leaves
Let's
the conference.
Let's go on vacation.
All right,
and then John tells us we have to blow it up.
Yeah. God. So that's kind of the physical setting. What do we think everybody attending looks like? Was there any kind of costume changes, or is everyone sort of wearing what they were wearing at the stage? And how do we think all of the delegates are interacting? Just kind of general vibes.
I think that probably some of them knew each other at various points, right?
For sure.
There's not like a lot of interplanetary travel. But I'm sure that there's like talk between commissioners about like resource deployment for settlement and that kind of stuff. And also like they didn't all start on their planets necessarily, right? Like the whole Verge writ large has been colonized for like less than 30 years. So many of these people probably either started on Aventine as like middle management before the war and then like spread out. And I think they probably knew each other.
I think there was probably a lot of people from Earth, too, though, right? Like, in terms of
right, 100%. Same.
I wonder, is anybody here young enough to have been born, like, elsewhere in the Verge?
Ooh. Like, history check. When did non-Aventine Verge planets start getting settled?
About 25 years ago.
Yeah. So they would be young, but...
I mean, they would be Leela's age.
Yeah. By the time Leela was born, I believe there were already other Verge planets.
I mean, maybe some of the younger members of the Aventine staff are probably born on Aventine.
Yeah.
Can we pick what planet?
Yeah, sure.
I think it's got to be Libera, because we've established that since it's closest to Aventine, it was the first planet colonized after Aventine. So, like, if there's a planet who, like, you know, birthed its own delegate, the oldest one is Libera. So I think that's probably where they're from. And I think they're probably the only one.
I think maybe we see them briefly speaking with Leo Norris, who is the journalist who we established, who is investigating the sort of mysterious ship sightings. It was from, I think, from Libera also. So if that's the scene, just to kind of paint the soundscape, I think we kind of hear... It's not like a loud ruckus event by any means. I think it's
bring the motherfucking ruckus.
I think there's muffled conversations, and I think maybe you hear like glasses and dishes clinking, and we had established that there's some kind of speaker system in this part, because that's what they use to normally pipe in the fake sounds of nature, or like the bird sounds in the park. And maybe that is playing some kind of low music sort of setting the background. Are the four of you speaking among yourselves initially, or are you kind of immediately fanning out to speak to other people at the party?
I mean, I think we would have already like been prepared, you know?
Mm.
Thoughts?
Yeah.
After his speech, I think Arno would have tried to get a minute with Dr. Belova.
Okay.
Yeah, I was also going to say, I think that Mara was going to go check on Arno. So, hey, how's it going?
What's up?
Sup, bruh?
Good speech.
Fucking depressing. Plus, did you not get the... We were all doing a thing, and he kind of took a dump up there. All right, so that's how Lauren would say it.
Yeah. Babe, save it for pillow talk.
For listeners at home, that's exactly how Lauren would say it.
Babe, what it's the like, actual fuck? We yeah. had a They've thing been, going.
If listeners at home are dozens of hours into the show, they know, right?
Yeah, they do. I think after the speech, and maybe we're just going back a little bit over here, Arno would have returned to the side of the stage that he came from. And I think he would have even turned and like faced the podium. And so if Dr. Belova is still, I imagine Mara's still where she was standing. So it's almost like he reset his position. He's just like standing next to you, doesn't really say anything, and just kind of stands staring at the podium. And I think his breathing's still a little like rough.
And can I paint this a little bit? Which is just that I think that if that's where you are, maybe it's like the entire focus has moved to a different part of the park. And maybe this is like, oh, people are kind of taking down this area, right? And you're just kind of still standing there, even though everything's been kind of, the focus has shifted away, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think Mara is standing there kind of looking quizzically at Arno. And I think she says, do you recall that we had a lengthy conversation about your strangeness? Where were you?
I met with Shaw. After we reviewed the plans, something seemed off and I needed to get a second opinion on whether or not there was another way into the facility. I needed to know if we could get more information, if there was a backup to Scion. And I had to go to Shaw. There was no one else I could turn to for this.
And did he offer you any helpful insights?
Scion is dead. Lillian Gale was Scion.
I think her eyes go wide and she looks down to kind of maybe reflexively almost hide her surprise.
When Shaw told me how to contact Scion, he made me promise that nothing would happen to them. He won't help unless we investigate her murder.
I think that Mara tries to pick out of the crowd Ramon Herrera. Is he somewhere like among the delegates? I know he was introduced, right? But I think she's going to try to make... I think she's going to try to find him.
I think you kind of survey the crowd, and I think the thing you're looking for is the Aventine uniform, right? And I think we had described when he arrived that Aiden Kyros was kind of flanked by several people wearing the uniform. That's maybe why you didn't notice him at first, or you kind of blended him with that crowd. But you kind of catch him. I think you see him standing, you know, it's maybe not immediately next to Kyros, but he's sort of in the circle with him. But I think you see him kind of looking around. It almost looks like he's looking for somebody else at the party. You're trying to catch someone else's glance.
Yeah. So, if I'm hearing you, the woman who publicly attacked us was actually working for peace all along, and someone killed her.
Yes.
This is a big fucking mess.
And we're on our own for this one. I'm trying to feed you the information that I didn't the last time we talked. So if you could ask, that would be really great.
I don't know. What are you trying to tell?
Yeah, I'm trying to tell you that like I'm not an FSOC anymore. And that's
so
what
just
I'm,
say it. So just fucking say it.
Yeah.
Ugh. Say it. There's another thing. I got fired.
Yeah. Or you could say something like we're on our own and it's like it's worse than that.
Okay. I think it's fine.
Yeah, you've given me nothing. We already had a whole conversation.
Fine, fine. Okay. Hold on. Fine.
Yeah, you don't get to put this on her.
Yeah, I'm.
Yeah, man. No.
Bully mic time, I see.
Yeah. Mic check.
Man, all of our bedroom stuff is coming onto this recording.
hey. World's best.
Listen,
men will literally talk about anything other than like their own vulnerabilities.
Men will literally talk about anything other than getting fired from FSOC.
Fucking say it, my guy.
I'm trying not to laugh.
Fuck. This has to be, I don't know what part of the show or, you know, of the pre-cards, the postcards this is, but this is good content.
Anyway.
This is good shit. This is good shit. Keep this in. I got fired from FSOC. There, I did it for you.
Stop. Fuck you all. Let the man think.
Except Haley. Haley hasn't been bullying me. Anyway.
That's Leela's job.
We're on our own this time. I'm no longer a member of FSOC.
I think at this, if there were, she was like facing the group of people, right? All of the people we just invited to do the peace thing. She's going to turn around and like cross her arms so no one sees the absolute fury and fear that exploded across her face. Did you have a change of heart about your employer?
Our last press conference was always going to have consequences. For me, blindsiding my commanding officer led to my dismissal. It won't be public. After the Minerva Project completes its mission, I'll be discharged from the fleet altogether.
She took everything. Or she thought she did. And I think she's resolute in looking up at him.
What do you mean?
You're still here. I'm still here. Our comrades are here. All of these people and the mission.
If we want to have the best possible chance of succeeding in our mission, I think we have to find out who killed Sion.
What if he can't help us? What if we're just wasting time helping him get some semblance of closure?
Then we are where we are now. Facing long odds and a wildly irresponsible mission with the opportunity for everything to blow up in our face and war to break out again. Nothing changes.
Okay. Have you done a pass around a room before?
Like scoping out for a stakeout?
Oh, no. Okay, follow me this one.
And I'll follow.
So while this is happening, where do we see either Leela or Nasir?
I think I am working the room.
Okay.
I mean, like, just like quick montage. You like see me shake LeClaire's hand. You see me like check in with Herman Eastling on the man we shot on Sadis and like whether or not he like how is he doing. I think that I like check in on the state of like what happened with the man we arrested on Eos. Like, it is just a montage of me smiling and being sincere, and like I'm working the room as like an expert. Yeah. And even the people who like wouldn't like me, I am like nodding to them in a way that acknowledges they're there. I'm like not encroaching on their space. Like working the room like a pro who's worked the room before many, many times.
What about Leela?
I think Leela is not working the room like a pro. I think she is maybe keeping to the sides a little bit and just observing a little bit more. I do think there is one person that she approaches.
Okay.
And that would be Randall Lawrence from Satis.
Okay. I guess as a reminder, so Randall Lawrence, this is the kind of head of security on Satis and
public safety.
Head of public safety, excuse me. And Hermione Sling's kind of right hand man on the council there.
Yeah.
So I think we kind of see Hermione Sling maybe is in the background and having a kind of separate conversation. And I think it looks like Randall Lawrence is actually checking something on his slate, and he has a kind of focused, concerned look on his face, as if maybe he's trying to sort of keep abreast of what's going on back home. And that
you could say it, he's doom scrolling.
Yeah, he's doom scrolling. He's kind of checking things out. But I think he kind of takes notice of you approaching him and looks up at you. And I think maybe he says, Ms. Malik.
Counselor Lawrence.
I think he kind of gives like a respectful head nod to you when you say that.
I think Leela's very much matching his energy. Mm-hmm. Because she definitely knows that these are not the friendliest of waters. So I think she's going to return his head nod. And I almost think she kind of lets it get a little awkward for a second.
Yeah. If I can actually, I'll respond to that and actually just say that I think that he actually puts the slate away, puts it into a pocket of his jacket. And I think he actually kind of smiles slightly, which I think catches you off guard and is kind of maybe a little disarming. You didn't expect that.
Yeah, just a reminder for our friends at home who maybe haven't done a re-listen recently, but we spent an entire arc insulting and lying to this man.
That's true.
Culminating in him essentially throwing us off his planet.
That's true. I will say, though, I think the person that threw you off the planet was East Lang, right? And not necessarily Randall Lawrence.
Yeah. It's just there was a lot of showdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, he also bore witness to a particular indexing session that, you know.
And I'll say maybe as a further reminder, I think the thing that was the biggest beef between especially Leela in particular and Randall Lawrence was Leela kind of insisting on Ruby Watson's potential innocence for the sabotage that occurred on the planet.
Yeah, I think first shoehorning myself into the investigation and then interfering and disagreeing with his conclusion probably did not make the man very happy.
I also want to name your first reason your hackles went up is because he said we have rules for a reason.
That's true.
And you said, I don't like him.
Yeah.
But I think you see him kind of, again, it's like a very narrow smile. I think this kind of catches you off guard a little bit. And I think he says, I know we didn't exactly see eye to eye back on Satis, particularly when the four of you first arrived. But in hindsight, I may have been too critical.
I think Leela's head kind of quirks up a little bit. Because this is a cocktail reception, I think there have to be staff circulating with drinks and food.
For sure.
And I think at this moment, this conversation just got interesting. So Leela's going to snag a glass of indeterminate drink.
Liquor.
Is it the Lucina champagne?
Age to space.
Here's the thing is you guys are like turning this into the most extravagant thing ever. And I just like want to be clear that this is a diplomatic.
But you just made champagne waiters.
I need you to know that diplomatic things are extravagant.
Yeah.
Those fuckers spend money like it's their job.
Because it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, it's not Lucina champagne. It's just Lucina.
Oh, yeah.
Because it comes from Lucina.
From the Lucina, the region of Lucina.
Right.
If it were anything else, it would just be sparkling. Okay.
Space juice.
Sparkling bobble.
Space juice? Yeah, it'd be space mash.
Sparkling bobble.
Oh, my God. Blapple moonshine. It would taste like chicken.
No. It's like a soup.
Think of the calories, though. The calories, the precious calories.
Right, so you take the basic wine grape, you have your Syrahs, but we actually got ours from Australia, so we got the Shiraz. We brought them to space, so we got our space Australian wine over here. happened to get cultivated on Lucina, started making it in toilets because Lucina was a penal colony at first. Then we go ahead.
Penal toilet.
Stop that. Right, we start making better wine, not toilet wine.
And we get Lucina. Back to the thing I wanted to do today.
Please.
What is
I do? It's always like I'm like halfway through dialogue and then, okay.
Yeah, but also it's not a penal colony. We established that we sort of eradicated that colony.
Listen. Shaw's been in jail for how long?
Please. I was in the middle like
how eradicated is it really?
You're shitting on my art.
That is art.
Okay. So I think Leela has snagged a glass and starts sipping on it and then continues the conversation and says, really? So are you saying you think there was more to the story about this Aventine spiring?
Certainly more than I suspected initially. The evidence linking Ms. Watson to the safe house you found was irrefutable. And that was an angle we'd have never uncovered if it wasn't for the four of you. And while their sabotage of the reactor was ultimately unsuccessful, there's no reason to think they wouldn't have tried again had we not intervened. For that, I am grateful.
He called Leela a cop.
I think Leela nods slowly and says, well, while I don't agree with your methods or your conclusions in this case, I appreciate your support. And I think she pauses and says, so what did come of Ruby Watson and the other members of this supposed spy ring?
The nine of them, including Ms. Watson, have continued to profess their innocence, and they've been confined to their homes as the investigation continues. But as I said, the evidence is quite strong against them.
I think Leela has to physically restrain herself from rolling her eyes, but she does remember that this is a diplomatic event and she is ostensibly trying to get this person on her side. So she's able to hold it together. I think she says, In any case, what do you make of this whole peace summit? I have to say I was not 100% sure that you and Counselor Eastling would be the ones attending.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, just that perhaps there were other members of the council who would have been more eager to attend.
Can I ask, what is Leela's vibe right now?
I think Leela's trying to play it cool and is just kind of honestly curious to see what Randal Lawrence has to say.
I think when you say that, he kind of lightly scoffs and he says, as I said on status, our relationship with Earth, both when we were a part of the Republic and still now, was one built on respect. We didn't appreciate some of your oversteps in the course of your visit, but that respect still remains.
I think Leela nods slowly and says, one of the points we made today is that citizens of the Verge were not truly represented at the table last time. And that's something we hope to change. I suppose it's good to know that the Republic has your support.
I think he kind of, it's not like a step forward, but leans in slightly. And I think his tone kind of lowers a little bit.
You may have already heard, but Ms. Watson has been spreading rumors
about your interview with her. A predictable response from someone facing the consequences of their actions. But nevertheless, I wanted to make sure that you were informed.
I think Leela tries to kind of shrug, but I think she's a bit too stiff about it, and it's pretty clear that she's not as chill as she wants to be. And she says, "Ah, yes. Well, I will freely admit that that session did not end as cleanly as I would have liked." And she kind of gives him a bit of a pointed stare because he is the one who interrupted the session.
Right, definitely his fault.
Yep, 100%. And then she continues, "But I don't believe there's any other cause of concern. I hope she is. I hope she's doing okay."
So, Nasir, you said you were kind of working the room.
So, yeah, I think I am working the room, and my intention is to make contact with every delegation in whatever manner is most appropriate, whether that's like talking with them, checking in on them, or, you know, like a polite smile or not, or solemn nod or whatever. But my goal is to make contact with everyone.
So I'll let you finish, but just as a question on that, does that include Mateo?
Absolutely.
What does that look like?
I think that from the moment I stepped onto the stage, this is a Nasir that would make Mar Elkin proud.
Okay.
There is nothing here but the operative. There's nothing here but the icon. So I walk up to Ramon with like a somber smile on my face. "I suppose congratulations are in order, Consul, though I am sorry about the circumstances." And I extend a hand to shake it.
I think he kind of looks up to you, and I think your eyes kind of meet for a second, and then he reaches out his hand and takes it, and maybe it's actually a little, like it would look a little awkward from the outside, and he says, "Yes, acting consul, and I do wish it was under better circumstances."
"I'm sure the authorities and your first speaker will do everything within their power to ensure justice is served. And if you'll excuse me."
I think he just nods, but then I think you see his, like maybe as you walk away, he kind of looks down, but then we see him like look up at you for a second.
I will walk towards the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I approach someone and say, "If it isn't the junior delegate from Eos," and I am using a title because I know she hates that.
So I think she turns around.
There's a huge smile on my face.
Yeah.
I'm like clearly being playful.
So I think she turns around, and I think that the outfit that she's wearing is sort of understated. I think I described this last episode, but you know, I think even then it still looks like sincere or elegant, I would describe, on her. But I think she has a kind of, she smiles at that, and I just think she knows you're joking. But I think you can tell there's kind of something, she has like a slight strained look on her face. So you can tell something's bothering her. Did you say that there was some title that people used for people who like came from Earth to the Verge, right? Like, was it pioneer? Is that the phrase?
I think they refer to them as pioneers, yeah.
So I think maybe she says, "Always nice to see you, pioneer."
When she says that, I will like fall, like fake clutch at my heart. Which is like, at this point, has a cinsa flower on it.
Mm.
"Now that is a title I will always wear with a badge of honor. How are you, Rivka?" And I will go in for a hug.
I think she returns it and says, "I've been well, though maybe the slightest bit homesick."
"I understand very deeply what it is to miss home. And understand even more what it is when that home is Aventine."
I think when you say that, she kind of takes a step. I don't know if it's toward you, but it's away from the bar. And maybe kind of the bar is off to the side of the park, right? And I think
she kind of takes a step in and is looking out at the space where all the rest of the delegates are assembled, with the fountain in the center and all these kind of trees and this grass in this sort of floating space. And I think she's holding a drink. Do you want to describe the drink? Like, what do we think this looks like?
I mean, I think that she's probably holding something that is in like a martini glass.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's probably like a
bubbles.
I think it's bubbly, but I think it's probably like an orange color.
Okay.
And it's got like some sort of like a burnt peel on part of the rim.
So what I think you notice, if that's what she's holding, she kind of steps out and almost looks like through the rim of the glass out into the park. She kind of like holds it up and is kind of like looking at it and looking through it or past it.
She's so cool.
And she says, this place, everything just feels... And she kind of trails off. And I think you see her, like, again, like, looking through the glass, and it looks like her vision is sharpened. And it's almost as if she's using this as a, like, a magnifying glass, right? And she's kind of staring through this and looking at the trees and the grass of this park, this kind of artificial construction in space to simulate something that was real millions of miles away. But then she sort of has like an animated look on her face, and it's sort of like how you saw her on Eos when she had an idea pop into her head. And she says, on Eos, you remember how I took you diving?
I remember.
We should find somewhere here too. Somewhere more real.
Give me a little time to do another round, and I know just the place.
Where do we see Mara and Arno?
I think Mara started him off soft, you know, on some some delicates that look kind of chatty, right? Like, she's talking about how those are the easiest if you're feeling uncomfortable in a new situation. There's people the most gregarious looking, if they're drinking something interesting, if they're dressed in interesting fashion. So she's giving him the ropes, all of the things she had to learn to deal
with humans.
Ugh.
The worst.
But I feel like they eventually might have split off and mingled solo.
So I think if that's the case, maybe you're kind of standing there, and maybe you're also just like looking around for the people you recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you see someone lock eyes with you, right? And I think that person is Annika Quayle, the woman that you literally bumped into on Eos.
Yeah.
And I think you kind of see her like notice you. So you're both, it's clear that she wants you to join in her conversation. But then I think you kind of scan to the right from her, mm-hmm. and realize that standing next to her, kind of in a, maybe there's like four people in this kind of conversational circle.
Yeah.
You see Aiden Kyros, First Minister of Aventine.
I think an almost indescribable look of intensity comes over Mara's face. And I don't think she even realizes it, but I think she is immediately walking towards that conversation circle and kind of maybe inserting herself.
Yeah. So I think when you walk up, I think Annika Quayle's face kind of brightens a bit, and she does that, you know, the kind of like the polite hug, right? And she says, mm-hmm. Mara, I was hoping to get some time with you before everything here turns to business, though my ego is not so big as to assume that you came over here just to speak with me. And she kind of like steps slightly sideways as if to open the conversation up to Aiden Kyros also, who I think kind of looks up, maybe he was talking to somebody else and notices you. Yeah. And I think he actually kind of warmly smiles and he says, Dr. Belova, an honor to meet you, and extends his hand.
I think she'll shake his hand back and say, First Minister. That's his title, right?
Yeah. I think when you say that...
I think I said First Speaker, but...
Yeah, you did. But I previously called him First Minister like 20 times. So you did say First Speaker, though. Maybe he's also First Seeker, right? It's like maybe he has a lot of titles.
Yeah, yeah. King of the Andals and the First Men, Stormborn. Yeah, all that shit.
Breaker of Chains and Mother of Dragons.
Yeah.
Aiden Kyros.
So the last line was, you called him the First Minister, is that right?
Yeah.
I think when you say that, he just holds up his other hand almost as if, like, to stop. And he says, we're in the verge. There's no need to follow Earth's formalities and titles.
I think she looks at him and maybe there's like a little bit of like wonderment on her face. And then just like the corner of her mouth goes up and she goes, interesting.
So I think maybe when you say that, it's kind of like there's like a little bit of like an awkward thing because you're kind of now commenting on the conversation as if in the third person. And I think
classic Annika, Mara.
Yeah. And I think Annika Quayle is kind of like looking at this and observing it. And I think she says, well, I was just telling Aiden how lovely you and Nasir were on Eos, as well as how forgiving you were for the embarrassing circumstances of our meeting there.
It was pleasantly serendipitous. We would have been completely underdressed and out of place for the festivities. You were very generous, and we appreciated your kindness.
She nods and says, well, I know that you're quite busy, but I do hope you're able to enjoy some of your first veil, and maybe that you'll experience another.
I would love to. Duty called, and I was not able to partake fully in the festivities. The tea, I hear, is quite divine. And then I think she'll kind of quickly move on and say, I'm quite happy to see a friendly face out here representing one of the Verge planets. You said no business talk, but I am interested in what perspective or request Lucina brings to our deliberations.
I think she gets a kind of like a slightly more, it's almost like it's almost like something a little pained. It's more like that you went there, I guess, if that makes sense. And I think what she says is, well, as you know, the war was not kind to us on Lucina. I think what we're most focused on is ensuring that this particular history doesn't repeat itself. But tonight is more about the future. But then I think she kind of looks at you and glances over to Aiden Kyros and looks back to you and says, but we'll have plenty of time for that and for rehashing the past tomorrow. And I think when she says that, actually Aiden Kyros kind of jumps into the conversation and he says, Doctor, I'm interested to know, if you don't mind my asking, given your time here, what is your impression of the Verge and of our lives here? It must be an interesting position for you, having done so much to create this, but until now, having never seen it for yourself.
It's funny, I have spent what to most of you here is a very small amount of time in the Verge, and I've seen almost nothing of what I've contributed. I've seen a number of worlds, beautiful ecosystems, incredible potentials. And I think she's kind of getting a little lost in thought. And it's not, it's like her mind's almost racing.
Mm.
And I think she says, she kind of gets back on message and she looks around and she says, so many things to preserve and so much collective future to build. And I think she's kind of nodding to herself and she looks up to Aiden Kyros and she says, First Minister, may we have a private sidebar very quickly?
I think he kind of looks at you and then looks at Annika Quayle. And I think she kind of
overheard this, right? And she says, I'm going to go grab us some drinks. I'll try to be more careful this time. And sort of walks away and leaves the two of you standing there.
I actually think that, like, the middle of this party is not private enough for the conversation that Mara wants to have.
Hmm. Do you kind of, like, lead him somewhere?
Yes, So I think she tries to, like, she scans, like, really rapidly and maybe identifies, like, a column or a pillar, and she just, like, starts walking.
Yeah. So I think if that's the case and you're kind of walking, I think maybe he says something while you're walking, like, to kind of fill the time. I don't personally know Leela Malik, and while I know many like him, to say that I know Mr. Hines would be presumptuous. But I've never doubted the sincerity or the intentions of either you or of Nasir, Doctor. Nasir lived on Aventine. Given what he lost there, what he lost at the hands of the Republic, I can't imagine why he would help them, save for a perhaps misguided belief that it's the best way to achieve peace. But you've done more to aid the Aventine cause, to spur the growth of this new branch of humanity, than perhaps any other person alive. Neither of you would have done what you did, risked what you did, for selfish reasons. Or at least I don't believe that.
I think when she hears the word selfish, she closes her eyes and just presses them shut. And I think if they've successfully navigated to, like, a private section, I think maybe they're, you know, like, standing there. And I think that she steps in as close as humanly possible.
Yeah.
And she essentially, like, puts, I don't know exactly how tall she is he is, like, to Mara.
I think he's pretty tall.
Yeah. Like, he can't see her face. She's that close.
Mm.
And she says, years ago, I sent your government a very, very special sapling. And I gave you particular instructions on the space it needed to grow and how to cultivate it. Did you plant it? Is it alive?
Is this something that he would have known was special? Like, what would Aventine have received, if that makes sense?
They got a sapling, right?
Did they know it was from Dr. Mara Belova?
It was not a crop. It was not, like, feedstock. It had handwritten instructions on a piece of paper from Mara Belova, the CTO of Jettisynth.
Yeah. And it would have been clear that it was, like, a gift. Is that right?
Yeah, the note was, like, maybe, like, one line about, like, a gift to the people of Aventine.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it, right?
Yeah. And I think it's, like, I mean, you just got, like, really close to him, right? I think he has a kind of, like, confused look on his face, right? Like, he doesn't know what's going on here.
Mara's not looking at his face.
Yeah. I think he kind of stutters, right? Because I think he's confused. I think he says, of course.
I think she, like, exhales and takes a step back. And I think he can see written on her face is just the level of fear and trepidation. And then, like, also, like, excitement, just like almost like a wild look on her face. And then I think she quickly says, thank you, First Minister. I look forward to our ongoing correspondence during this peace summit. And I think she quickly walks away.
I think what we see is you walk away. I think he almost, like, involuntarily, like, goes to kind of, like, extend his hand. Like, I don't think you see this. And I think it's, like, too far away from you. He's almost just like, I think that he can tell that something's going on here, that you're,
I think he can tell that there's something going on with this that he doesn't understand, and that's that it had some emotional weight to you that he didn't fully understand. And then I think you kind of see him lower his hand.
Hey there, it's Mike. Thank you so much for listening to Worlds Away. It's been an absolute blast making the show and inspiring so much future fan fiction. If you're enjoying Worlds Away so far, you can help us out by spreading the word to friends, family, and coworkers you corner at the water cooler. We're relying entirely on word of mouth to advertise, so this is the number one way to help support the show. And if you've already talked about us to everyone you know and want another way to support us, you can also rate and review us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other platform you use to listen to podcasts. You can also give us a shout out on social media on most platforms at Worlds Away Pod or at our website, worldsawaypod.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the episode.
Where do we see Arno?
I think Arno's walking around the room aimlessly. He picked up a few pointers from Mara on small talk, but really it seems like a massive waste of his time. It's a lot easier when you're reporting on the completion of a mission or looking to get new orders or just generally have something that you know you want to talk to somebody about, but going to talk for the sake of talking just seems pointless. And so I think he's looking for somebody that he will have an easier time engaging with while he finds his footing. He surveys the room and he sees Katia LeClaire. But that's a no-go. Not here. Not now. I think he wants to talk to her later in a much more private setting. One where if she's going to blow up at him, it won't be publicly while he's wearing his Minerva Project jacket.
Okay.
Aw, growth.
And so I think the next easiest person for him to engage with would probably be Astrid.
Mm. If that's the case, I think that you see her. I think she's standing near the fountain. I think maybe, again, there's kind of a few people around her. But I think you also notice, I think maybe you're off to her left. Her daughter's like standing off to her right side. And I think she's clearly wearing nice clothes as if to participate in this. But you see that she still has the VR headset on, right? So even here at the party, she's not really engaging with the adult business here.
It kills me that I forget her name every time.
I think it's Mia.
There we go. Thank you.
That poor kid.
I know, right? That's my supposed favorite NPC, too.
No, I just meant, like, literally in the fiction. God, that kid must that be so freaking bored.
Yeah, they're just going over Calc 1 again.
I'll make my way over to the fountain. I'll just offer, and I'll offer. I know you do calculus for fun, but is this also entertaining to you, Mia?
Oh, so do you kind of walk up to them and you address, like, Mia? Is it how you start the conversation?
Yeah, something about that's just easier.
Yeah. Okay. And I think it's like you came from the side opposite her, right? Mm. And so I think Astrid sees you and locks eyes with you, and I think other people notice you, right? And especially as one of the four members of the Minerva Project and being very recognizable, I think you're kind of, you know, as you approach a crowd, people look to you. But then maybe you kind of like smile and or like, you know, or maybe you don't. I don't know how Arno reacts to that, but you know, maybe lower your gaze or bend down to talk to Mia. So I think kind of without looking up, she says, not especially.
Hmm. Why is this little girl here? They don't have childcare in the future.
They never passed FMLA.
Oof.
That's where the timeline split.
No, me neither. But usually the food's good. And John, are there any servers around carrying little like cocktail hors d'oeuvres?
I think for sure there can be. What do you think they have?
Okay, well, I have a list, but I'm going to narrow it to one.
Oh, that's horrifying.
God, can't men
he's
have
options? I just want to say for, you know, this is a visual. He literally pulled out his phone and is scrolling to look at notes.
You leave him alone.
Yeah, we planned this entire, this is a professional delegation event. We put some time and effort into it.
Right. Even if like, Haley insists that we didn't need this, just whatever, fine.
I'm on Team Mike and Team Haley. Fuck us for trying, I guess. Our GM doesn't want us to care about the world. No. You heard it here first.
That's
folks.
True.
John hates it when players care.
Me, famously detail phobic.
So I think that because this is a summit, we would have sourced a lot of our food from planets in the Verge. And that means that we have a lot of Genesynth crops available to us. And I think that food in the future, like fancy food anyway, hot cuisine, has an emphasis on juxtaposing temperatures or sights rather than focusing on like very weird flavors. And so on this particular tray, I think we see what look like, what's the shape I'm thinking of over
balls.
Here? It's like an elongated
dick,
like an ellipse, but 3D. I'm trying to think of what the shape on that is.
Oh, wood.
And it looks like it's a tempura fried vegetable that we're going to call frosty root here.
Okay.
Bear with me here.
New Genesynth crop dropped.
It's kind of a cross between a sweet potato and a parsnip, but even when it's hot, it has a subtle cooling sensation while you're eating it. So your mouth is both hot and cold with the crispy as it's going down. And it's got.
And what effect does this have? Is it cool? Is it.
When you bite
is
into
it, like
it
Sichuan?
It's hot and steaming. However, when you like start to chew on it and it mixes with your saliva, it starts to cool down immediately in your mouth.
And it means you can spend like up to 10 minutes in cold weather or hot weather.
Oh, you're asking what the buff is on this thing. Yes. Sorry.
I did not get what you were getting at with that,
okay,
tip.
If I chase that with like a red colored, let's call it a potion, whatever. Could I, do they stack?
Yes.
Which hors d'oeuvre gives me advantage on all my rolls?
Yeah. Oh, actually, okay. That's the one. That's the penis. Comet caramel tart with the growing fruit coulis, which gives off a soft luminescent glow when exposed to light. This is item number 2 on the list. But anyway, back to item number 1.
Hey,
there,
can we
I do
stop
wanna finish.
Doing
there was a,
what we're doing was, and just Mike read his list?
There's a spicy soy mustard drizzle on the tempura, and that's what we've got over here.
My mouth is salivating. I'm gonna be spitty on Mike.
You're earning the explicit rating for this podcast right now.
There we go.
This is Anals Untold.
There's a whole backstory for how this menu came about, by the way, too. Earth's greatest cook, Emeril Lagasse, was part of this legacy.
I didn't mean to laugh there, actually. I'm sorry, Emeril. You didn't deserve
that. That's okay, you can. It was meant to be funny.
Bam!
Jose Andres.
And I pull up a couple of these tempura bites, and I'll go ahead and offer one to Mia and one to Astrid.
I think Mia takes it and kind of looks at it quizzically, and then like is it a thing that you're supposed to eat in one bite, you think, or is it like a sort of bigger than that?
I think it's a little too big for one bite. I think you could do 2 bites.
Okay.
And she's 9.
I think she kind of looks at it as like rotating it in her fingers to kind of like take in what it is. And then she does kind of, I think she bites into it. It's like a skeptical look. And then she starts chewing and then like starts kind of chewing faster. And it appears she's enjoying it. I think Astrid takes it and is kind of holding it, but doesn't immediately take a bite of it. I guess I should have expected running into you again here. Thanks again for looking out for her. And kind of looks down at Mia.
I won't pretend it's an accident. I'm terrible at small talk, and so familiar faces seemed like the best course of action.
That must be tough for you being forced into the role of a diplomat here. And she kind of takes a bite of the hors d'oeuvre.
This is not my strongest suit, no.
Nah, you look good in it.
Sorry, it just hit me now. That when we started this series, when we talked about how all of our characters were like sexy in the future, because obviously there'd be future tech to make us sexy, we started recording this before Ozempic hit the market, and now the technology just fucking exists.
Yeah.
Shout out to Ozempic.
Woo!
Scientists be fucking crazy.
This podcast brought to you by Ozempic.
It's like, guys, what did we say about brands? Hold on, let me get back to it.
That's actually the tagline now.
No, thank you.
Yeah, you can buy it in vending machines right next to ivermectin.
I think she says, it's hard to deny that there's not some irony in one of Earth's 4 ambassadors to the stars
being one of the heroes of its last war.
I think at that, Arno's face hardens and he says, "No one that comes back from war is a hero." And realizing he just said that in front of Mia, he just sort of immediately catches himself and says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have."
I think she says, and by she, I mean Astrid says, "No, it's quite all right. If you didn't already know, she's quite mature for her age," and kind of looks at her almost,
almost annoyed.
Yeah, like he's kind of irritated, like to her. And maybe she kind of rubs the top of her head, eliciting an eye roll from Mia.
So, do you find these sort of gatherings productive? It seems like we have quite a bit to do to just be able to meander, right? And I almost feel like the correct thing to do here would be to drop all the fanfare, get us all in a room and have us hash out, you know, all the business and get out of here as quickly as possible, or just keep us there until it gets done.
I think at that, she actually gets a warm smile. And I think she kind of takes a step closer to you and says, "On that, I think you and I agree. I've always appreciated a more direct approach to things, but some people insist on the dance. And so here we are."
"Well, I don't suppose I can just cut to the chase and ask where your head's at in all this."
I think when you say that, she kind of chuckles and says, "No, I'm afraid not. That wouldn't make me the best negotiator, would it? I will say, though, we do owe you for your help on Feronia. I won't say it wasn't a bit messy, but you did help us take care of a problem."
"No, I thought I'd be getting off too easy there. I suppose I'll have to apply a little more finesse to make any progress in these talks, but I'm sure we'll see more of each other in the coming days. If you'll excuse me."
I think she nods, but looks up at you.
At that, I turn away, and at first I'm thinking about how, what to make of what Astrid said, but then I'm thinking about how to leverage more information out of her or anyone, and I'm getting kind of stuck here because with the finesse, the problem is that they can say no, and then I've got to go back and find a new way to get the information that I want. But if they know that I'm coming, then it's a bit of a problem, and so I'm trying to think of how Mara would want me to handle this situation, or maybe even Nasir. But then it hits me that I'm not Mara or Nasir, and I've got a mission now that I need to work on, another secret one. And I think I just need to play to my strengths. John, where's the nearest vending machine?
I think it's almost been like, maybe like the lights around it are off, right? Like they kind of have de-emphasized this because they're trying to make this park into some kind of nighttime fantasy space garden, right? Where all these delegates are having their fancy drinks and, you know, kind of circulating, right? But maybe off to the edge of the park, maybe it's kind of near that, you know, you mentioned the structure where you had bought the food that one time. Maybe it's kind of like off to the side of that. There's some kind of machine that has like packaged snacks also for after hours. Okay. Maybe it's a little dark there, right? But, you know, I think you can see it would still work. Like maybe the light of the machine itself is on dimly.
So I'm going to go to the machine. I'm going to punch in the code. I'm going to pick up the snack that I've selected. And if I recall correctly, there were people from Aventine that were taking notes on paper. Is that correct?
I'm sure. If anyone from Aventine was taking notes, it would have been on paper.
Is there any chance that on Aventine, folks still have fancier fountain pens that they might keep on a lapel by any chance?
I like that idea, right? But I think that part of the image of Aventine, it's not about excess. It's about...
it's like physical reality, right?
Right. It's about like being rooted in reality.
Mm.
It's also about independence in like the idea of disconnectedness, right? Or like that you have to like go somewhere in the physical world to connect to something. So like, do I think they would probably like carrying a pen would be normal on Aventine? Yes.
Mm.
But I don't think it would be like fancy, if that makes sense.
Interesting.
Not Aventine itself anyway. Like the Lucina people might, also, like, I think it would be visible, right?
Mm. Okay.
And the last thing is I think they would be unique, because part of it is also the written word is, like, expressed, you know, with what you do. So, like, I don't necessarily think they use ink the way we think of ink, where it's, like, all blues and blacks.
Mm.
You might have a pen that, like leaves a felt texture when you write. You know what I mean? Or, like, writes in neon.
Okay.
So I think it's less that they're, like, fancy fountain pens and more that they're, like, very individualistic.
So, John, here's what I'd like to do. I would like to identify a mark, preferably somebody from Aventine or Lucina, who is wearing a pen that I can see, either on the lapel or hanging out of a pocket. I'd like to bump into them, and I'd like to palm the pen.
Okay. What is your, like, end objective to all of this?
I'm going to write a note.
Why do you need to steal?
Because I don't think I can just ask somebody to borrow a pen.
He wants to write a note as if he's from somebody.
No, I think he just doesn't know how to ask for help.
Men.
Men would literally...
I literally just finished saying I need to play to my strength. So let's just, like, let Arno regress a little bit here.
Like, I do. I actually, upon, like, making fun of you, you did explicitly set this up as saying you're going to do it no style. And that's apostrophe.
All right.
In A-U-D.
I think go ahead and roll act quick then. And
okay.
I'm going to decide, I think, how this goes.
Oh, this is a plus zero. This is really bad. Fuck. I really don't want experience right now.
Before we even start.
Oh, no.
Where he rolled.
Get them bad rolls out.
Oh, could not be worse. That's really bad.
Get them bad rolls out.
Okay, well, I'm looking at my self experience.
What'd you get?
A two.
For the Mo re-listening, it's a two.
That was a two, and I have a plus zero modifier. Not that it would have mattered. It seems an automatic fail no matter what.
Okay. I hope it explodes in your
hand. Plus five modifier makes it a seven.
Fun fact, by the way, the only rolls in the entire show that we don't end up saying the number for are when we fail spectacularly, where everyone's just like, ooh, and like it moves on and we never said the number. They're all fails.
Well,
it's quite amusing.
I literally said this. That's on me.
And can I just ask, okay, and can I ask, so you said you were going to write a note, and you're being very cryptic. Who are you writing the note to?
Katia LeClaire. Because what I pulled from the vending machine was a protein bar, and I intend to leave a note on it.
Okay. So here's the thing, like, you can take a pen, right, man? You can take a pen.
You're the one who made him roll.
Well, yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, where do you think the pen is on this person? Is it, like, on the strap of a bag, or what does it look like here? And what does the person that you took it from look like?
I'm going to go ahead and say it's a man, medium dark skin, forest green suit, one color the whole way through, but it's three-piece top. And I'm going to call it three-quarters length for the jacket. I think everything is on their outfit is just various shades of this one color. And I think that they've even got accents in their hair and their makeup of the same shade of green.
Two fingers dyed the same forest green.
Mascara, the whole works.
A vision.
And where was the pen?
I'm going to say that it was over their breast on the left side.
Titties.
Yeah. Thank you, Mo.
That was another really strategic hit there.
He just hasn't missed all day.
Listen, you guys are setting him up.
And how do you get the pen? Like, what's the field craft? How do you get the pen off of them? This just feels like a challenging position to get the pen from someone.
Yeah, so the way that I was planning on doing this was I was going to look for somebody who had a drink in their hand. I wanted to bump into them, have them spill it and get distracted so that I could use that distraction to sort of take a napkin and palm over them and steal the pen with the napkin hand.
Okay. So I think what happens is you bump into this person, but I think it doesn't go exactly the way you intended. And then I think there's, like, the pen kind of hits the ground and rolls a little bit, right? But I think several other possessions fall out of this person's, like, pockets or bag, right? It's like, oh, a bunch of, maybe it's coins, right? We talked about Aventine as physical coins, right? And I think that it's like one of those situations where you're helping pick everything up, but I think you're still able to get the pen, right? You grab the pen and you're able to palm it, but it was like, oh, it's kind of clear that he noticed you helping him pick everything up. And I think he extends a hand and says, thank you for helping him pick up the coins.
I'm terribly sorry. I've just got two left feet.
I think you're able to move away, and I think you're able to sort of get to a place where you don't think you'll be seen. I think you'll be able to write your note.
I think the note is just going to have instructions for where to meet in that location. Where we met before, where have I done things? I think the location is going to be a time and a place, and it's going to be the bench where I left the drop for Scion.
Okay, so it's in this park, but just at a later time.
That's right.
Okay. People get murdered there.
That's the only place I can think of off the top of my head. It's that or the Valiant.
The library.
Okay.
I've never been there. I don't read.
Now's your chance.
So I think you are you just writing this like on the wrapper of this thing? Is that the game plan? Okay. So I think you do that. And what do you do with the pen after you finish writing?
Where's the fountain?
I think the fountain's kind of like behind you to the right a little bit. It's maybe like 20 feet away.
Can toss it into the fountain.
So you kind of like walk over and just like slide it in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like subtle. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think you do that and you have the wrapper or the, you said, is it a protein bar or is it the candy bar?
That's right. It's a protein bar. Yeah.
Still coffee flavor.
Still coffee flavor, of course. And where's LeClaire right now?
I think you kind of survey and you see that she's off to the left side of this gathering. I think that maybe she's in a group of four people, including herself. And maybe like one of the four you can see kind of talking to her, and there's two others kind of facing away from you. But LeClaire's back is to you. I think she has like a sort of, if you're looking for like a target for this thing, she has a purse or bag over her left shoulder.
Yeah. I'd like to just drop the protein bar into the purse. I don't want to break stride. I just want to slip it in there.
So I think what happens is, and this is the consequence of the fail now, I think you go up and you, like, kind of with perfect field craft, walk up behind her and you slip the protein bar into the purse. But I think then you hear behind you a voice say, excuse me, did you happen to see my pen? I might have lost it with the coins. And you kind of turn to the left and you see the man who you bumped into. But I think then you kind of look over your right shoulder and you notice that the people that were in the conversation with LeClaire turn to look at you. And while two of them you don't recognize, one of them is a woman with pale skin, straight dark hair tied into a ponytail that ends just below her shoulders. And she has the slightest hint of wrinkles that are forming at the corner of her dark brown eyes that narrow significantly.
You done fucked up.
As Admiral Isabella Mendoza looks at your face.
It was a two. God damn, man.